UAB Medcast is an ongoing medical education podcast. The UAB Division of Continuing Education designates that each episode of this enduring material is worth a maximum of 0.25 AMA PRA Category 1 credit. To collect credit, please visit uabmedicine.org/medcast and complete the episode's post-test.
Welcome to UAB Medcast, a continuing education podcast for medical professionals. Bringing knowledge to your world, here's Melanie Cole.
When injured or invaded by disease, our bodies have the innate response to heal and defend. A number of organs have the intrinsic ability to regenerate, a distinctive feature that varies among organisms. Organ regeneration is a process not yet fully understood. However, when its underlying mechanisms are unraveled, it holds tremendous therapeutic potential for humans. My guest today is Dr. Devin Eckhoff. He's the director in the Division of Transplantation at UAB Medicine. Welcome to the show, Dr. Eckhoff. Give us some factors and pathways that are involved in the organ's intrinsic regenerative ability. Tell us how organs can regenerate and what do they do to defend themselves?
Well, depending upon the organ, they have different pathways. Some organs, such as the kidney and most of the organs in the body, regenerate by just hypertrophying, getting bigger cells and more cells. The organ that I transplant, I do liver transplants. It can actually regenerate, and you can cut a liver in half, and you can grow a second, that half that you remove can grow back. And you can, in essence, have a whole new liver at 10 to 12 weeks after removing a portion of it.
So how does tissue engineering and regenerative medicine fit in with current medical practices?
So in the field of transplantation, we get organs either from living donors or we get them from deceased donors. And the process of that donor undergoing brain death or stroke damages the organ. So it's really important that the organ can regenerate or get back to its full function. Historically, we've used preservation solutions, and we cool the organs and put them on ice. This, though, only allows the organ to not go under any further damage. However, there's new studies and new processes where we can actually perfuse the organ with oxygenated blood, put it on basically a heart bypass machine, and give the appropriate nutrients and allow it to recover before we put it in the body.
So in terms of keeping organs viable for a longer period of time, what is the research telling us?
Well, if you can repair the organ, you can take some organs that may not be transplantable or that were damaged during the process of either procurement or how the deceased donor died and allow it to regenerate, and that'll give you an organ that can then work. So we think using some of these techniques of normal thermic preservation allows us to expand the organ supply and get more people transplanted.
And tell us about genetically modifying organs, Dr. Eckhoff. What's going on in that world of research?
So here at UAB, we've embarked upon a new effort to eliminate or decrease the disparity between supply and demand. No matter how many organ donors we have, there will always be a big gap, and many people die. There's whether kidney or liver or particularly heart and lung, waiting for an appropriate donor. So we are working on genetically modifying pigs where we change the surface of the cells that allow them to be recognized as foreign, and we change them so the body will no longer recognize them as foreign or as what we call a xenotransplant. So we started doing some research in there in this field, modifying these organs that we hope within a year or two we'll be able to transplant a kidney from a pig donor into a human.
That's fascinating. And so when you're talking about biomaterials, and you and I have discussed pig valves, so what are you doing there?
So the body has a natural defense, and you have preformed antibodies. So when they use valves, those antibodies can't bind because the recognition or the things on the surface is not there, so the body doesn't see it. But if you're using an organ, you need to have viable cells, and they have little flags, if you may, that allow the body to recognize this foreign. And we cut those flags off so they're not produced, so that the preformed antibodies have nothing to bind to, and we turn what is called a xeno, a transplant from one species to another, into an allo, which is like a human to human transplant. And here at UAB and across the world, we've done thousands of transplants. So we know how to do allo transplants, and that makes it much less of a hurdle if we can convert a xeno to an allo because we know how to manage those patients. We know what drugs to use and what kind of side effects those medications have in those patients.
So how does this translate clinically into promising therapies into active trials?
Well, once we get enough data in the preclinical that we hope to embark upon a pilot trial where we find patients that would need a life-saving organ. In our first trial, we're going to look focus on kidneys. And we got to find the appropriate candidates that we think would benefit from a kidney transplant. And we'll screen those to make sure that they would be compatible with these organs. And then they would get a transplant very similar to an allotransplant, but they'll have to be monitored for the rest of their life to make sure that there's no untoward effects. But this would allow some people that currently don't have much hope for getting a transplant to allow them to get a transplant and get off dialysis.
In your opinion, Dr. Eckhoff, do you prefer this research of biomaterials to medical devices and artificial organs such as LVAD and ones like that?
Well, LVAD and a lot of the other medical devices right now are bridges. I mean, they do have a total artificial implantable heart, but there's some problems with that. And I think if we could have nature knows how to do it right. And so we want to mimic or use nature because they've figured out how to make the pump work or secrete insulin or how to filter the blood. And we're making great strides with these bioartificial, but they're not as compact as the organs are. They don't function as well. And there's a lot of other than just filtering or pumping blood that some organs do, secrete hormones, that's hard to replicate making a mechanical organ.
And what about rejection? Do you see that things like biomaterials, like a pig valve, are going to have less of a chance of rejection? Or where do you see that going?
Well, we think with further bioengineering, first we want to get them just so we can do transplants, but we have some ideas that you can further change them to decrease the likelihood of rejection, and maybe in the future you can insert genes in that locally would produce anti-rejection medicines in the organ itself to help protect it from rejection. So I think this is the first step of many steps that we hope that can revolutionize organ transplantation.
And do you think it might help to solve the ever-growing need for donor organs?
Yeah, I think it. Not only there's over 100,000 people on the list in America waiting life-saving organ transplants, but if you had a readily supply of good functioning organs, there's a lot of indications now that we don't even consider transplanting people who could get benefit if they had greater availability of organs for transplantation.
So in the last few minutes, what would you like other physicians to know about organ regeneration and what they can expect tomorrow on the horizon?
So I think with the technology, we always hear how it's kind of exploding, but it really is, and it's no longer in the lab. It's now starting to be commonplace. We have better ways to preserve organs, and we hope to develop a better supply of organs that's readily available. I think it would offer tremendous advantages for patients to be able to schedule their transplant, not just waiting for a call in the middle of the night to come get it. So I think it's a really exciting time in medicine and particularly in transplantation with all these new developments.
And how can a community physician refer a patient to UAB Medicine?
Well, there's a 800 number, 1-800-UAB-MIST, that they can call, and there's always a physician on call from our team and all different specialties at UAB that would be happy to take a referral or answer any questions.
And tell us about your team, Dr. Eckhoff. Why is UAB so great to work with?
Well, we have a very multidisciplinary team, physicians, surgeons, pharmacists, nurse coordinators, and anesthesiologists. And I think it's not about one person, but it's building a good team. And we've always tried to focus on building the team with a patient-centered focus, and that's what we, I believe, we have achieved, and that's our goal, and that's one of our missions is to have a patient-focused transplant program.
And what can a referring physician expect from your team at UAB Medicine if they refer a patient to you in terms of communication and ongoing care?
Well, we have a very good communication getting back. With both letters, and if they wish to communicate by phone calls, there's always, again, the missed line to talk. We've got a lot of pre-prepared educational material for our patients, from DVDs to online videos and education. So we believe, you know, it's a real partnership not only with our patients to get them better, but the referring physician.
Thank you so much for being with us today. It's a fascinating topic. You're listening to UAB Medcast. For more information on resources available at UAB Medicine, you can go to uabmedicine.org/physician. That's uabmedicine.org/physician. This is Melanie Cole. Thanks so much for listening.